Looking for your next favorite podcast? Start here.
In the mid-14th century, there was the first outbreak of the second pandemic of plague, and that outbreak is known today as the Black Death. And that killed approximately 30 to 60% and even more of some populations throughout Asia, the Middle East, Northern Africa, and Europe.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since.
Today, I'm going to be telling a specimen story. The tale of how a single, tiny fossil bone, a museum specimen, has changed our understanding of the natural history of this planet.
On the way today, more or less, behind the statistics, white lies, and pastime. Welcome to Start Here from Cincinnati Public Radio. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Each week, we sample and highlight three podcasts to help you navigate the exploding podcast world and maybe find your next podcast obsession. Plus, get an email summary of each podcast we feature with our weekly Start Here email blast. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here blast email at the bottom of the page. And if you like what you hear, please rate us at Apple Podcasts. A 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. With special thanks to Cincinnati Public Radio's Wiser Advisors, Jim Nolan and Kevin Reynolds, and writing research and curation support from Connor Eldridge, let's start here. You hear a lot of numbers when you're listening to the news, percentages, averages, rates of change. It's often hard to make sense of it all. Well, thankfully, there are experts that are here to help, like the experts at our first podcast, More or Less Behind the Statistics, from the BBC World Service. More or Less tries to make the statistics around us a little more straightforward. Host Tim Harford and his team go behind the numbers on everything from chest to heart disease to determine what the stats really mean for you and the rest of the world. Are humans having less sex? Is Mansa Musa actually the richest person of all time? Is having a roommate actually more cost-effective in the long run? All these questions and more are tackled by the More or Less team, and some of the answers may not end up how you'd expect. Give you a taste of this from a recent episode of More or Less titled, Should We Reverse the Snap? This installment explores a question posed by the latest Marvel superhero movie, what would happen if half the world's population was wiped out instantaneously? In this clip, Tim explores the potential economic impact of this wild and strictly fictitious issue.
And yet, should we really want to go back to a world population of 8 billion? Or, as Thanos believes, might we be better off with a little more elbow room? I spoke to Professor Sharon DeWitt, an anthropologist at the University of South Carolina. I wanted to know whether there was any precedent for losing half the population so suddenly. We have this astonishing situation of losing half the world's population, 4 billion people. Mm-hmm. Is there any historical precedent for it?
Yes, there is. So in the mid-14th century, there was the first outbreak of the second pandemic of plague, and that outbreak is known today as the Black Death. And that killed approximately 30 to 60% and even more of some populations throughout Asia, the Middle East, Northern Africa, and Europe.
So really very, although it wasn't completely random, in terms of the overall death toll, about half the population.
Yes, exactly.
So this gives us a historical benchmark then for evaluating Thanos' policy. So what were the effects of the Black Death?
Most of my research focuses on skeletal remains of people who died during and who survived the Black Death. And what I found from assessing those remains is that at least for a few generations after the Black Death, there were improvements in survivorship. So that means that on average, people were living longer after the Black Death than was true beforehand. And if we can use that as a measure of general health, it suggests that health improved, again, at least temporarily after the Black Death. So we don't know that this was a long-term effect, but things were temporarily better in the aftermath.
So 10, 20, 30 years after you had this catastrophic population loss, people actually seemed to have better lives. Well, certainly longer lives.
Yeah, longer lives. So, of course, this isn't considering mental well-being or other aspects of what we would consider to be well-being. But perhaps as much as 200 years after the Black Death, people were living longer and seemed to be, in general, good health, at least as far as we can tell from their skeletal remains.
Do we know why?
Well, there are several possible reasons. The Black Death, by killing so many people in such a very short period of time, at least in the context of England, it produced a massive shortage of laborers. And as a result of that, the people who had survived, it opened up economic opportunities that hadn't been there previously. And so in England, wages, real wages, so what people are actually capable of purchasing, increased dramatically right after the Black Death. So for agricultural laborers, for example, real wages rose 50% higher than they had been prior to the Black Death. It took a little longer for other people's wages to rise, but in general, wages increased afterwards. And because of this, people of all status levels were able to purchase more and better food. And so people were eating better in the aftermath of the epidemic.
A sample of more or less behind the statistics from the BBC World Service. Get behind the numbers to the truth of the stats with More or Less, available now on WVXU's Podcast Central. New to our Podcast Central collection this week comes an old story of guilt, memory, and injustice that resonates with America just as much today. NPR's new podcast, White Lies, tells the story of Reverend James Reeb, a minister and civil rights activist who was murdered in Selma, Alabama in 1965. At the time, three men were tried and acquitted, but none was ever held to account. Now, some 50 years later, two Alabama journalists return to the city where it happened to expose the lies and backroom deals that kept the murder from being solved. It's a tale of betrayal, conspiracy, and corruption that paints a vivid picture of the civil rights era South. Host Andrew Beck Grace and Chip Brantley take the resources of NPR to Selma to explore how a cloud of lies took hold over the truth and hopefully uncover the truth. A sample for you from the first episode of White Lies is here, which will give you a good sense of the messy, complicated story that follows. In this clip, Grace and Brantley set the scene for a story that would have local and national implications for years to come. Here, we feature the violence that breaks out in Selma in 1965, being the catalyst for the many Northern activists to head south and join the fight, activists including Reverend James Reeb.
The cameramen on the bridge rushed to develop their footage and send it on to their producers in New York. Within hours, the violence in Selma is the lead story on every network. One of the people watching the news that night is a man named James Reeb, whom everyone calls Jim. He's a white Unitarian minister. He's living in Boston. He's working on low-income housing issues. And he's watching the footage that night with his wife, Marie. They're both outraged, and Jim feels sick, feels like he has to do something.
The next day, Martin Luther King sends telegrams to major denominations throughout the country calling on clergy of conscience to descend on Selma and lend their support to the cause of the marchers. Jim Reeb doesn't need much prodding. He knows he has to go. His wife, Marie, doesn't want him to go. They've got four young children. She watched the footage from Selma with him, the brutality of the troopers. Think of what could happen. But she also knows the man she married, knows that when he's made his mind up, there's no dissuading him. So after Jim reads a bedtime story to his daughters, Marie drives him to Logan Airport. Jim arrives in Selma in time to take part in a short march, this time led by Dr. King. That evening, Jim, along with two other white Unitarians, Clark Olson and Orloff Miller, walk to a nearby restaurant. Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come, which had become an anthem for the movement, is playing over and over on the jukebox.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since.
The restaurant was very full, as it is, as I understand it, one of the two integrated restaurants in town, and I so that particular one was quite crowded.
And this was about 5:30 on Tuesday afternoon.
By that time, it probably was 5:30 when we got to the restaurant, yes.
That's Clark Olson, one of the ministers with Jim, interviewed just a few days after the attack. So the three ministers are there in Selma. They enjoy the meal on Washington Street, the conversation, and then it's time to leave. Years later, this is how the other minister with them that night, Orloff Miller, remembered the scene.
After we had eaten, there was a phone booth inside the restaurant. And so I called my wife. And then Clark and Jim both called their wives, too, from the same phone. And I went outside the restaurant while they were making their calls. I remember I bought a cigar. I still smoked in those days. And I stood outside the restaurant smoking my cigar as the streetlights were just about to coming. They were just beginning to come on. They were these sodium vapor lights. And I thought to myself, what a peaceful scene this is. It was dusk and there was nobody on the streets. And I thought this could be any Midwestern community like I grew up in Ohio.
After Jim has finished his long-distance call, he and Clark meet Orloff out front. And here's that moment on the street, the three ministers wondering whether to turn left or right when everything is just about to change.
From the podcast White Lies from NPR, hear the haunting story of murder and deception from one of the most tumultuous times in American history on White Lies, now available on WVXU's Podcast Central. If you or your kids are looking for your summer fossil fix, look no further than this week's local podcast, Pastime. Hosted by hometown paleontologists Matt Morris and Adam Pritchard, Pastime is a podcast that explores how we know what we know about the past. Matt and Adam dive into modern paleontology, investigating the techniques drawn from physics, chemistry, geology, and biology that paleontologists use to figure out what extinct animals were like and how they lived. Whether you're just starting out on your Jurassic journey or you're a fossil fanatic, Pastime is the perfect place to dig in to the amazing animals that have called this planet home. Take a listen to this clip from the episode of Pastime that explores the first frogs of North America, documenting when they appeared, what they looked like, and how they lived. In this clip, you'll take a look at a recently discovered tiny pelvic bone that completely rewrites the history of amphibians in this part of the world.
Today, I'm going to be telling a specimen story. The tale of how a single, tiny fossil bone, a museum specimen, has changed our understanding of the natural history of this planet. Now, to find our fossil specimen today, we need to travel to Dallas, Texas, the Perot Museum of Nature and Science. The Perot is a really cool museum if you've never been there. It's got amazing displays chronicling the natural history of Western North America, with particular focuses on the Cretaceous periods of both Texas and Alaska. So a great spread of the end of the age of reptiles in the west of North America. But that's not the only thing you'll find if you enter the fossil collections at the Perot. In addition to these Cretaceous treasures, there are also a lot of specimens from the Triassic period, the first of the three stages of the age of reptiles in the Mesozoic. And that includes our specimen today. Code number DMNH-2018-05-0002 is a single, tiny pelvic bone of a frog. And when I say tiny, I'm not joking. The thing could fit comfortably on the head of a pin. It's been compared to an eyelash in terms of both its size and how delicate it is. And yet, that tiny piece of a frog has contributed to a much bigger story. Now, in past time, we haven't talked a lot about the modern amphibians, but they're a really successful group, and the group of amphibians today with the most species is definitely the frogs. There are more than 7,000 frog species currently chronicled by scientists. They're characterized by, you know, those massive, powerful hind limbs that are usually adapted for some kind of jumping or hopping. The head is broad and very round. There's usually little to no tail, and many frogs undergo a metamorphosis from a limbless, fish-like tadpole stage to a fully legged adult frog stage. And that's apparently a really good way of making a living on Earth, because frogs are distributed on every continent except the Antarctica, and if you look back in the fossil record of the Cenozoic, the Cretaceous, and the Jurassic, frogs seem to be pretty much everywhere, And they already have a lot of those classic adaptations.
A sample of the local Cincinnati podcast, Pastime, with Adam Pritchett and Matt Morse. You can learn more about the many creatures that came and went before our time on Pastime. Available on WVXU's Podcast Central. To the charts we go, our weekly trip to the Apple Podcast charts to see what's hot around the country by iTunescharts.net. Question for you. Do you know The Man in the Window? No, not In Your Window. The new podcast that debuted last week and immediately hit number one. For decades, the Golden State Killer eluded police and terrorized California. Now, a suspect's in jail and awaiting trial. How did the violence go on for so long? And is there anything we can learn from the investigation that eventually led DNA technology to help authorities identify the suspect? The new number one podcast this week, Man in the Window. And for more information, be sure to check out the Start Here email. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and choose the Start Here newsletter from the bottom of the page. Thank you for joining us for Start Here, Cincinnati Public Radio's Discovery Podcast. For more information about podcasts we like, check out Podcast Central at wvxu.org. And remember, if you've got a podcast or an episode you'd like to recommend, email us at podcast@wvxu.org or call us at 513-294-8030, and we'll add your voice to ours. For now, I'm Trip Eldridge for Cincinnati Public Radio, and thank you for choosing to start here.